This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hi, friends, it's Sarah May, and this is an episode that's going to be vaguely about disengaging from thoughts and expectations and, in other words, unconsciousness. And today I'm talking with one of my heroes, one of my favorite people in the world, Pam Grout. And Pam Grout is the author of 20 books, including E Squared, one of my favorite books of all time, E Cubed, Think and Grow Rich. And her latest book is called The Course in Miracles Experiment, A Starter Kit for Rewiring Your Mind. Hello, Pam. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's such a treat to be here. When you sent me the email and you mentioned that about the Evil Dead thing, it's like, oh, I remember that so clearly because I love that story so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Context for everybody. So I like when I first bought E Squared, I actually listened to you on a podcast interview. This was like a decade ago, and you were interviewed by this guy, David Wood, who's like, I think a network marketing guy, but adore that guy. He was like, had great energy, and he exposed me to so many cool people, and you were one of them. And I ended up buying your book while I was on a business trip in Texas and did all of the exercises. And one of the things that happened was me and my husband got free tickets to the sold out live Evil Dead musical in the splash zone, which is in like the first row where you get sprayed with blood, fake blood. It was like one of the coolest things that's ever happened. We literally walked up and like, this guy goes, hey, are you looking for tickets? Cause we're like, oh no, it's sold out. And he goes, here, 2 free tickets for you. And I was like, what? It's amazing. So yeah, I took a photo and I sent it to Pam and we ended up being in her newsletter.
Yeah.
Which you should all subscribe to. It's filled with positive and amazing uplifting content. Speaking of which, I wanted to give you just context for like, so this show is very self-helpy. I know that is like a kind of an ambivalent topic for you somewhat because it's like, it makes you focus on what's wrong in many ways. But I think a lot of people struggle with trust and like fear in investing in people that are going to let them down. And I think a lot of people who are fearful of stuff like that are people who have baggage or have trauma. And it's like, if other people have failed you, you're like, I don't know if I'm going to believe in this thing. So it makes people a little tentative about, you know, trying things that are too out there, or, you know, the term woo-woo is used a lot. So I think a lot of people that have experienced baggage, it's like, it takes just a little baby step at a time to start to like open up to new thinking. And I, as I said, I discovered you 10 years ago and I've just been starting to like kind of try things out, and I'm in the process of kind of opening up again, I guess, after many years of having lots and lots of baggage around different traumas and emotional stuff. So I think I would love to talk to you about just how a person can start that process of like training their brain to not anticipate the worst and not to complete the future when it hasn't happened yet, and kind of like the power and magic that comes about when you're able to do that.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite topics these days. You know, yeah. I'm kind of known so much for the manifesting books, and you know, those are great and I love them, and it's good to know that you can manifest. But I think where I'm at now more is letting go of anything that might prevent me from knowing truth, from knowing this love. And I think one of the biggest hurdles for people perhaps is that they don't fully trust that there is this benevolent force that really does love us. You know, we've been conditioned a lot by some of the churches. And yeah. So we have this idea about this sort of judgmental God. And so I think because so much of us have that, and plus our parents weren't perfect, you know, they were human beings doing the best they could do. So I think a lot of people, as you said, don't, I don't know, there's just a fear, but I think if, in fact, that's why I think I did do the experiments, because it's like people need to know how much this force, this whatever you want to call it, you know, God, divine intelligence, the cosmic, whatever, the mothership, it loves us, it guides us, it is there for us. But we put up these walls and we don't enjoy it. We don't access it. We don't plug ourselves in. And so I think when you talk about baby steps, I think it's really important to just try a little bit. I mean, I say jump right in, just plunge right into the pool. But some people maybe aren't ready to do that. So, you know, just do little tests, little short things. But, you know, if you really get it, and if you know how much you're loved, everything becomes so much easier. Because, you know, it's us that puts up the defenses. It's us that has the thoughts that block us for love. The love is always there for us. It's who we are. I mean, this love, this joy, this peace. People don't believe that, but that is the truth of who we are. And so we learn all these patterns. We put ourselves in these boxes. I mean, there's so much out there, and we are just in this. We only see this little tiny speck of reality, and we think that's the way it is. And it's always from the conditioning, from, you know, how we were raised, or, you know, what we've read in the newspapers, or whatever different thing it might be. But it's so limited. So I want people. I mean, I don't know. I don't. People can do whatever they want. I don't have any investment in what other people do. But for me, and what I, you know, talk about in my blog and different things, is just to really get it that you interact with, and that the source is always wanting to bless you, guide you, work with you constantly. And so anyway, that's kind of what my message is. That's what I am always working on or playing with. I try not to use the word work with.
Yeah.
Work, you know, has connotations. I like to play with things. Like when I do what some people call workshops, I call them play shops, because we want to play around. Let's make it fun, kind of like a child would do it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I don't know if I answered your question. I was kind of long-winded. Sort
yeah,
of.
No. I mean,
ring around the rosy.
I'm the same way. I do feel like it is a child. I mean, like having two little kids, I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, or almost 5-year-old, and everything is just like filled with laughter and spontaneity and like wonder. And I'm like, oh, I remember that being the way I could just naturally be. And it's like, if you kind of remind yourself to be that way in the morning, or like remind yourself to be that way throughout the day, I feel like all this other knowledge opens up, and I'm also able to see people better. You know what I mean? Like, I just noticed that if I'm in a like controlled, stressed, kind of retracted place, I only see that in other people, and everything I'm doing is prompting them to react to me in that same way. Versus if I can come to them in like just joy and or love, in the love state, I guess, everything is so much less kind of like combative, angry. Like I get different information back because I'm able to see it. It's like energy tuning very much creates everything you bring into the world and how other people respond to you. It's just so dramatic. I think you mentioned it in one of your books as like training a puppy and telling a puppy where to pee. It's like, I feel like the brain is exactly that way. It's like at least for me, it's like, I have to constantly maintain the, you know, reminders to myself to like, no, don't expect the worst. Cause then you will be able to see things better and like get different feedback from the world.
Right. What we see in other people is really just a piece of us. I mean, everybody out there is just us. We're all one. It's just our perception makes it believe that this is a separate person and that this person. So it's really a reflection of what we have in here, what we're seeing out there. So the more we can be open to that love and that joy that's within us, the more we get that reflected back to us. Because it's a mirror. It's just like looking in a mirror. Mm-hmm. One of the things I said in one of my books, I think this is kind of funny. You don't notice that your mascara is smudged and try to fix it on the mirror. If there's something that's not going right, you have to fix it within yourself, on yourself. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's kind of how I feel about everything. You know, you know, we're going to get back. I guess one thing, if there's an obstacle, it's always a doorway to something, to realization, to recognizing, to maybe cleaning up that part of yourself, maybe that, you know, still wants to see that kind of stuff. So anyway, even the things that we might judge as, oh, I don't want that, are also, you know, a path that can lead us to where we want to go.
Oh, totally. How did you first discover? Cause like, honestly, I think throughout my life, whenever I'm like the most down, or cause I can usually think my way out of any kind of really bad mood or starting to get that dark cloud. And when I can't, the first thing I do is I read one of your blogs or one of your books. Cause I feel like you're a constant flow of just like a reminder of like, no, be love. Like, the world is full of love. Don't forget that. And it's just like, it's resetting in such a powerful way. How did you start this path? Like, what was the impetus to kind of see?
Oh, you know, that's such a nice compliment. Thank you so much for saying that. But I have to tell you, the reason I write the blog post is for me. You know what I mean? Like, I need the reminder myself. So, but as far as, I was a student of A Course in Miracles, I'm still a student of A Course in Miracles. And I started that back when I don't know, 25 years ago, maybe more now, maybe 30 years ago. And I don't know if you're familiar with A Course in Miracles, but it's all about, you know, rewiring your mind and therefore the world. So I started doing that way back, so long ago. And, you know, you do these lessons, you go through 365 days, and then I started over again every year on January 1st. And that's basically what it says, is that, you know, we truly are peace and love, and that the best thing we can do is get out of our own way. One of the things they say, and I kind of joke about, I said that my hero is that guy from Hogan's Heroes, you know, Colonel Schultz, and he goes, I know nothing. And so I always think, you know, that's really the way to come in. Because if anything we're sure about, we have collapsed the weight, and that's how it's going to be. So if we go in like knowing nothing, freeing ourselves from our minds, from our thoughts, from our baggage and our patterns, then the world can unfold in a beautiful, wonderful way. And it is doing that, but we're not always aware of it. So that's a real good way, just to let go of everything we know, surrender it all. So I started, I guess that was your initial question before I started rambling on, was I started doing Course in Miracles probably when I was in my early 20s. So yeah, I've done it for a very long time, and I'm a slow learner because I still am doing it. So.
And what kind of brought it about in your life? Were you just like, I'm sick of being bummed out?
You know, I have always felt a call to spirit, to a spiritual path. Now, I grew up, my father was a Methodist minister, and that was a very prescribed spiritual path, you know, kind of Methodist, was he was a Methodist minister, but that wasn't my path. I mean, of course I, you know, went to Sunday school and did all that sort of stuff, but I always felt that there was something bigger, something more. So I felt drawn to that from always. And then when I got, you know, went off to college, and that's when I, you know, started experimenting or exploring other spiritual paths other than the one that, you know, I was taught as a child. And I just came to realize how much bigger the world is. But as far as Course in Miracles, I probably did start when I thought, you know, there's got to be a better way. In fact, that's what they say with Course in Miracles. Everybody says there has got to be a better way. And then of Course in Miracles is your better way. And there's a lot of other better ways, but you know, the way that society teaches us, the way our, some of these religions teach us, some of the things they teach us, there is a better way. And I actually kind of asked the universe, show me the better way. And that's really, you know, when I was brought to Course in Miracles to do that.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I know your newest book, I think for anyone who hasn't read one of your books, I just love the style of your writing. It's very like relatable and accessible and funny. And like the way you kind of give anecdotes for everything, it makes even like kind of like the boring content really funny and interesting. But like, what can you talk about maybe your favorite part of the book? I've been listening to the audiobook just because I like listening to your voice.
Oh, you listen to the audiobook of which book?
Of course, the new one, your new one.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. What's my favorite part? Gosh. I don't know if I have a favorite part, but one, I will respond to what you said about, it's kind of funny to listen to. I feel like anything that we want to be sustainable, sort of has to be fun. If you come out like, oh, I've got to do this again today, eventually you're going to quit wanting to do it. Right. So we want to keep opening up, keep, you know, noticing the joy. And so that's why I try to write in a kind of a funny manner. Plus, I just like writing in a funny manner, but kind of make it entertaining. I'll use pop culture references. And I don't know. I guess it's just my style. And again, I think it's powerful because I think it keeps people going and if people, you know, want to hear about it.
So yeah.
And now you may want to adjust your volume for a brief word from our sponsors.
No, totally. I mean, that's definitely true for me. I have to say, like, because I have baggage around religion and I like was brought up in several religions that I could not relate to whatsoever. I remember being a kid and being like, this is bizarre. Like, you want me to talk to who? What person is this? Like, I don't know what you guys are into, but I'm not into that. And then like having to go through all the like performances and stuff like that and the rites of passage that I didn't have any connection to. So I'm very like weary of stuff like that. And like, for me, I'm definitely like listening out for things that resonate with me and that feel true for me. And I do feel like a lot of the A Course in Miracles ethics and truths are universal, and they definitely like, I'm like, oh yeah, that's totally true. Like so a lot of them, like, it's just kind of basic, almost like understanding the way your brain works in many ways, or the way the human brain works, you know?
Yeah.
Cause like the human brain's so limited and so small, and like, it's just little, you know, this little computer we get to like help our bodies not die like while we're here.
Yeah.
But it definitely doesn't know everything, you know? And so like, for me, that's kind of the most powerful aspect of A Course in Miracles, which is like just reminding you like, no, it's not your job to know everything.
Yeah. Well, I just finished reading Michael Singer's book. He wrote Untethered Soul. I don't know if you read that way back when it was a bestseller. He's got a new one called, Living Untethered. He made a point that I thought was so fabulous that, there's what we know, the little box of what we know, the facts we've taken in, the, experiences that we have. And, compared to all that there is out there, it's like what we know is statistically insignificant. So I thought that was a really funny way to say it. And now when they've just recently released those pictures from the James Webb, have you seen any of those pictures of all these other galaxies? I mean, they just maybe 2 days ago released them, and it makes you realize, like, those little dots, those are all an entire galaxy. So how could we even possibly think that what our little pea brains, I always call my brain a pea brain, comes up with could possibly have all the answers? I mean, what I know is statistically insignificant. I just really like that. That's a good way to say it.
Yeah. And I think that's like, for some people, it's scary to feel that way. Like, we want to know concretely, like the truth. For me, that's like a relief. Like,
oh my gosh.
Comforting. You know, like, I'm like, oh yeah, I don't have to know everything. Cause that would be impossible. Like, for me to know everything would mean that my brain would explode. It would just not be able to hold all of it. So it's kind of like a reminder to like step back and just enjoy the ride and like witness, like, and notice that you don't have to solve for everything. Cause you couldn't possibly know what the right thing, the right answer is at any given time. It's like a reminder, to trust or listen, I guess. I would love for you to talk about just, because I think I forgot what you said in the newsletter recently, but it was something about like, everyone is vying for your attention. And it's like, it's almost like right now there is just like a war for attention. And I feel so much for people who have grown up only with smartphones. Cause it's like, it's such a, you have no private psychic space. You have no like separation from this like constant pull for like, here, look over here, Let's spend 5 seconds here. And like, now spend it over here. Now. So it's like, I think for a lot of people, it's a version of being unconscious all the time. And like, cause we're constantly busy. We're constantly checking. We're constantly worried about this other thing and that other thing. And like, it's like a very, selfie centric kind of way of living. And I'm like, I don't think people will realize that that's pretty much being unconscious. Like, you're not really fully living life in that way. And so I would love for you to just elaborate on stepping back from that and the war for attention.
Yeah, I just read the book Stolen Focus by Johann Hari, and it was a fabulous book. And one of the things he talks about is not only are we more distracted today, humans all across the planet are more distracted, but that it's actually a conscious thing that these big media companies are doing. It's Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff. I mean, they want our attention. And he interviewed a guy who knew how destructive this force was, that he worked for Facebook, or he worked for one of them. And he even made up this PowerPoint presentation about what they're doing. And in the end, they didn't listen to him because they can change things to where we wouldn't get so sucked in by that. But they chose not to because that's where the money is. So they are vying for our attention. But one of the things I wrote about in the book, and it's so true, our attention has great power. We know from quantum physics that what we put our attention upon, we draw into our life. We collapse the wave of certain things. So even though our attention is being vied for by, you know, everybody, it's very powerful if we can get it back and if we can put our attention on what we really want to see in the world. And for me, and this has just been so holy for me, I have become so connected to my little yard, my little patch of the planet. I mean, I feel like I'm connected to all the trees, the birds, the butterflies, the plants that I'm growing. I mean, and that sounds like, but I can feel that oneness and that happiness and that life, you know, that's just there. So one of my goals is to stay off of social media as much as possible. I mean, I still do. I mean, you know, again, we've got all these campaigns trying to suck us in, but I cannot tell you how much joy I find in the moment in my own little backyard. You know, it's just a small little backyard, but seeing all the plants and I've got a little fox down the street that I walk every morning and I go see my fox and I just feel like I'm in communion with this little piece of the planet. And it really, you know, it's been very meaningful for me. You know, it's like, I know I'm mentioning all these books I read, so I guess I do read a lot of books, but I feel like all my wisdom, not my wisdom, the things I'm learning is coming from the natural world instead of from, you know, words on a page or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you read or heard of Entangled Life?
No, it sounds interesting.
It's a book all about fungi. And this guy, Rupert Sheldrake, who I'm a huge fan of, created the theory of morphic resonance. Mm-hmm. And his son wrote this book. He's like a botanist. I think he's a biologist botanist. And he, it's all about his studies of mycelium and how, like, it's basically the collective unconscious of nature. So it's like this, you know, interconnected web of communication between trees and like all these organic systems. It goes much more in depth than that, but it really blew my mind. And also I can see how it translates to like humanity and just like, I'm like, oh yeah, that's exactly how we work too. Uh-huh. It's like, you know, we're all expressing things through one another and like working things through, you know, emotionally as like an entire population of humanity. And, yeah, after you were describing your garden, I just thought of like all the, in my garden, all the butterflies play with my dog.
Oh, how fun.
Like that's like beautiful. Dive down and like she gallops with them. I'm like, weird. They're all playing. That's so funny. What is I'm asking this because this show is very tools based. What is like one of your kind of go-to best of tools when you're like hitting a wall or you're if you get into a bad emotional loop?
Yeah, I would say just really trying to come back to the present moment and really just stopping and kind of noticing my heart beating and recognizing I'm not making my heart beat. I'm not moving this blood through my body. And so really just stopping and being in the moment. And I find that in that moment, all answers, if I need an answer, or all comfort, all needs are met in this moment. And it's always, the only thing that's ever wrong is just the thoughts in my head. I mean, that's all that can ever be wrong. Life is moving, enlivening, doing all that stuff, but my thoughts can make it seem like that's not happening. So it always comes back to, you know, coming back to the moment for me and just dropping down kind of into that wordlessness and just feeling that connection again with my trees and with my birds, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the moment, all answers are in the moment and they're nowhere else. And I, you know, we look everywhere else, but they're not there and they're not in my brain ever. No answers are in my brain. It's always this bigger thing and this, you know, life force that is here in this moment, in this now moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. If you think about it, your thoughts are kind of like judging. They're like the spectators that are trying to make content.
Exactly. Yeah. That's all they are. It's like a little stream, you know, it's like that little news, that thing on the bottom of a newscast, you know, just kind of keeps going. And what we do is we latch onto one and then we start, you know, adding mass to it and doing more. But if we just kind of let it go, it's like, it's just a thought. Thoughts mean nothing. That's a big one for people don't want to believe that, but it really is true. Our thoughts mean nothing. So if we, you know, disentangle from them, or, you know, kind of ease back from our thoughts, we find much more peace. I mean, of course, in miracles, yes, why I got into it, it's all about having peace of mind. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. So, and then getting guidance from the Holy Spirit, but peace of mind where we get. So if we can let go of that stream of thoughts, then we come back to that peace of mind, or I guess mind, that sounds like mind. It's not even the mind, peace, you know, I guess we just call it the mind.
Yeah, totally. I think like, I don't know if you think about like in any situation you're in, you could craft one, like a really positive narrative, like around all of those facts and tell yourself like a really positive story, or you could find all the negative and tell a completely opposite story. And both of those are true. Technically.
Totally true. Every time you can do both. That's what's so amazing. You know, I don't know if you ever do any of Byron Katie's work, but it's all about, well, you know, you actually flip every belief over and you find evidence that it's just as true as what you just were thinking the other
thing. Yeah. So. Yeah. I've watched some of her work with people. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I think also just one thing I realized when doing the E Squared book those years ago was just like when I was scanning for something and expecting something, then you just, it shows up and you're like, what? So it's like, you are very much creating reality with expectations.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry about that phone call. I didn't realize I had my phone in here, but
it's all good. I'm wondering if I can ask you a little bit about Taz. Is that
sure? Okay for sure. You? I love to talk about Taz. I mean, she's still very much alive within me. And so I love to talk about her. So yes,
okay, good.
Ask away. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so anyone who's interested in checking out the 222 Foundation. So Pam created a foundation for projects that are positive. Well, I'll let you describe the call for entries.
The ultimate goal of the 222 Foundation is to change the consciousness of the world, because that's the only thing that's really going to change things. I mean, there are so many people out there, you know, working on various issues, but we have to change the consciousness. It comes back to that before we're ever going to make any real change. So that is the mission of the 222 Foundation. It's also eliminating or working to prove that some of these beliefs that we have, like scarcity, like, oh, there's not enough in the world. There's, we're limited. So a lot of these beliefs that we have, we're working to override those beliefs or to prove the opposite. And we also celebrate creativity, because again, and you know, creativity to me doesn't come from the mind. It comes from being connected to that bigger thing. And with that, we can totally change the world. The only reason the world appears as it is because we kept believing and seeing it that way over and over and over again. So the 222 Foundation, which was started, well, the February, the 222, February 22nd, after Taz passed of a cerebral aneurysm, has always been, you know, funding a project that does work to change the consciousness of the world. And so we've had 4 grants so far. And then of course, we'll be putting out pitches for 23, the grant in 23. But we've started several projects. We've got a regenerative agriculture project up in Canada. We've started a library in Nepal. The first year, and this was really powerful because I was in India soon after she had passed, which was, you know, do I even go? I mean, it was so overwhelming. But we got there we went to the Taj Mahal after I'd done my thing with Tribes for Good. And turns out it was a monument to love. And the person that's buried to this monument in Agra is so amazing. Her name was Mumtaz. I mean, that was actually her name. And it had 22,000 people, 22 years to build it, you know, because we have the 222 thing. So anyway, so I was like, wow, I was really meant to be here. And we actually left some of Taz's ashes there. But then when we left, we went to this place called Shiro's Hangout. And it was a bunch of women who were, I guess, he used the word survivors, but they had acid thrown on them, which is a thing people still do in India. You know, the guy gets bad because the wife you know, didn't have a male baby or whatever, so it throws acid. And so here are these women who normally would be shunned in society and would never, you know, come out and show their face, because I mean, their faces literally were melted off. But what they've done instead is to go out and they started this She Wrote Hangout, and they give food away free. They have art projects, and it's this beautiful, inspiring place. And it's really a complete different consciousness that, oh, you know, you need to go into hiding. This is so anyway, and just still be giving and loving. So anyway, they were moving to a new spot, so we helped them do that. Was the very first year. But so anyway, those are the kind of projects that we do. And it keeps me, you know, connected with Taz and, you know, working on some of the things. She was just like this amazing spirit. You know, I think to myself, wow, well, how did I get so lucky to be her mom? You know? So anyway, I just keep her alive in any way that I can. So,
yeah. Well, and it sounds like also you have such a strong connection to her. Part of me wonders if like she passed so you could tell other people how to stay connected to people that pass.
Yeah, you know? I know. I mean, it's so much bigger than what I understand. I mean, it's not at all what I would have ever wanted. I mean, it really, but it does, if you want to, you know, get out of your little box, you know, believing that we are only these bodies, this is a good way to do it. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, so I will always be connected to Taz. And so she has to communicate in different ways. But just like, you know, it's obvious she was no longer the two-year-old, you know, with whatever, the little onesie, she was no, you know, as she grew, she's changing. And so now she's no longer in a body, but she still feels very present and with me. And I feel like even, you know, contributing, guiding even this 2-2-2 Foundation, because I mean, it just came to me right away to do this. And so, yes, I do stay connected to her in every way that I possibly can. And I know that I'm here, you know, who knows how much longer, and I'll see her again. You know, it's a way of really jumping out of boxes to have something like that happen. Cause it's, you know, it's a big thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was so moved and, mourned for you when that happened. I'm still like, I'm just in awe of how you have moved through. And part of the reason I bring her up, besides to promote the foundation, is I know a lot of people in my audience are struggling to let go of things or to move through things. And a lot of, at least for myself with loss, I was like for a long time, just refused to confront it and let go. And like my body, I was just like, no, I'm never, ever going to heal. I'm never going to not be sad. And that was like my child reaction to like not wanting to let go. And I didn't realize at the time I was like actually losing them in that resistance. Uh-huh. Like clinging to the loss and clinging to the moment of loss was just like pausing me there in this, like, you know, I'm resisting the flow of life. And it's so hard to do that and to just like to let yourself mourn and let yourself, you know, let go. I think because we don't realize that we're actually getting closer to them when we mourn and when we like, you know, stay connected to our life. So if you feel comfortable, I would love any insight you have onto how to process something like that or move through it.
Well, you know, grief will take you where grief takes you, you know, and you just have to kind of surrender to it. And you know, it's been very difficult, you know, particularly when it happened, it was just such a stunning, shocking thing, you know, it just, my healthy, wonderful daughter who, you know, traveled with me so much and we were just really close and she's my only child. So she was fully, we were texting on the phone, you know, when I'm going to see a movie, when, you know, the cop comes to my door. So, you know, it saying she's, you know, being life flighted to Kansas City. So it was, very, very challenging. But as I mentioned earlier, every challenge is also a gateway to a new way of looking. And, you know, I've always asked for new ways of looking. This is not what I would have chosen. I would never, ever want this, but it's what's happened. And it has opened me to different dimensions of reality, different possibilities of reality, and communicating in a whole different, bigger way. I mean, if there's anything that makes you really want to embrace the bigness, the immensity of what's here, it's, you know, to lose a child. So it really has pushed me in that direction even more. You know, I was already on that path, but this has really, you know, accelerated that, I guess you could say.
Yeah. It's funny. My client, or I shouldn't call her my friend, who has a nonprofit called the Teen Project that's for victims of human trafficking, she always says, like, what it, like, she gave me this God box that's to put like intentions into the universe. And she's like, don't be very careful what you put into that, because like, it's going to happen, and it's going to happen in a way you're not expecting it to happen. And I'm like, oh man, I learned that the hard way. I put in, I wanted to get married and I ended up getting married to a not good person back in the day. But yeah, I do feel like, I mean, oftentimes we are about to get a ride that we don't anticipate, or we're not in control of. I think a lot of people also who are in my audience are struggling with just like trying to move through pain or trying to let go of pain. And I think one thing you do so well is just, I guess, manage your pain by reminding yourself you don't have to surrender to it, or you don't have to commit to it. And I would love for if you have any tools around that in particular.
Oh, well, I believe we do surrender to it. I want to surrender to it. So I want to surrender to life and what life has in store for me. And as we mentioned earlier, there's always two ways to look at everything. And so, you know, the fourth question that Byron Katie, or maybe it's the third question Byron Katie asked, is how does that thought make you feel? And so we get the choice. Do we want to keep grabbing onto the painful thoughts, or do we want to honor, I mean, in the case of losing my daughter, honor her with, you know, changing consciousness, with staying connected, with enlarging my viewpoint. So to me, that's a way of honoring her. So that's a way of changing that story, or looking at a different dimension of that story. But so I want to surrender always, and surrendering to the grief, surrendering to the loss as well. Mm-hmm. And knowing that there is a bigger story going on, there is a bigger picture, and I'm here for the bigger picture. I'm here for the, you know, the path, the guidance that life is sending me on. You know, I'm here for it, showing up for it.
Yeah. I mean, did you ever anticipate that your life trajectory would be this grand? Because I feel like, I don't know, I think of you as a spiritual teacher to many, and like just your trajectory as a writer, I feel like it's just skyrocketed into like such a higher realm.
Well, that's funny, because I don't see myself as a spiritual teacher in any way. You know, I'm just the person who likes to write and happens to enjoy exploring spiritual topics. But no, I don't ever consider myself a teacher. In fact, after I wrote E-Squared, everybody starts wanting to invite me to come give what I call workshops, what I call play shops. I mean, I've been to Japan and Finland and, you know, Mexico and Peru giving workshops. I'm like, I'm just a person who likes to, you know, do experiments of spirituality. Or so no, I don't see myself in that way at all. But I do feel like it's a constant surrender. It's a constant, being open for what's mine to do, you know, show me, I'm here. It's this moment. What's mine to do in this moment? It doesn't matter what it's going to be next moment or what it was 3 moments ago. What is it right here in this moment? So I don't know. So yeah, that's funny, but I guess maybe I definitely didn't see this as myself. See that as my path. I've always just liked to write, and I believe in following what you love to do. I've never been big into, oh, you've got to get a job. You know what society tells you you need to do. I've always been on a path to honor what my, you know, what my gifts are, what my dreams are, what mine's to do. So writing was always it. So this, you know, this, the success of that book kind of launched me into this whole other thing. But again, I don't identify with that label spiritual teacher at all. I'm still waking up myself. You know, I work, I play daily with these ideas of, you know, being in the moment and, you know, so, yeah.
Well, I guess I like the play style of spirituality then.
Yes.
Because I get
the best way to learn things too. Somebody had posted a meme and I took a copy of it. It said something like, you know, how many repetitions it takes to learn something. It was some, you know, like say 400, but if you do it in a playful way, it only takes 12 repetitions, or it was something to that effect. I think that is so true. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's all about playing, and playing means just not being so you know, like you were so lucky, you know, having a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. I mean, they are the teachers. Oh my goodness. They are there. They're so present. They, you know, they cry when they cry. They love when they love. They explore. They're open to everything. And, you know, I think we parents get it wrong. We think, oh, well, we've got to teach them. No, we need to watch them and follow them. So yeah, they're the ones that have it all together. If you ask me.
Oh, I agree. I mean, half the time I'm just like, oh man, I wish I didn't say that. It's like, yeah, not as much mad at them. I'm like mad at myself. Like I shouldn't have corrected them. That was that I just shut down their creativity and they're like spontaneity. I just told them not to do that with my actions. And it's like, I feel like I'm trying to unlearn fear, like most of the time, you know, or like some sort of conditioning that I'm like trying to pass on to them. When I'm like, why do they need that? They don't need that.
Right.
That's not helping.
Yeah. I heard a story once, and I think this was just a story, like a myth or something. There was some spiritual guru, probably from India or something, but his parents didn't one time tell him what to do anything. He just, you know, followed whatever. And I think they were a wealthy family. So, you know, I think somebody followed him around to make sure he didn't get hurt or whatever. He found enlightenment just because he was already enlightened. Like we already are, but we put up all this, you know, all these roadblocks to it. And, you know, so anyway, I don't know if that was true, but I love that idea. And I was as present as possible with my daughter. Of course, I too had my expectations of, you know, what you want, you want your kid to call, you know, you think of those kind of things. But really, when I think about her wisdom and her connection, it's like, why wasn't I? And I did, someone gave me the advice when I was first pregnant, and they said, you know, don't try to get her to move at your schedule. You slow down and go at her pace. And that was like some of the best parenting advice I ever got. You think I, you know, as a writer, as an independent person, I was able to do that. You know, I didn't have to get her up and run her to daycare. You know what I mean? I was able to move at that sort of pace. And I feel like that was a real powerful lesson for me and, you know, probably just what it was for her. But it definitely, you know, made changes in my way of thinking and being.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think one of my favorite things about having two babies is like, we're on the ground staring at ants all the time and like just super simple things like just lying on pavement after it's like been in the sun for a long time. It's just one of the best feelings.
Yeah.
And like being really focused on like an ant moving, a leaf, like a texture of some sort. And then also having to constantly be present, like, I know for some people who are very ADD and have struggle with being able to meditate, like one of the ways you can meditate is to like catch a ball just because it forces your brain to be present. And I feel like I have a version of that all the time because I'm constantly chasing the 2-year-old and like trying to make sure she's like, I've got both in my eyesight. it's like its own meditation, a permanent meditation.
It is for sure.
I would love if you could tell, I mean, I know there's the new book, but I would love if you could tell anybody out there, like all of your social media, any of your website info, like any of the, I know I already mentioned E2, but.
Oh, well, you know, anybody wants to find out more about my books or anything is just Pam Grad. If you know my name, you can find me on Instagram. I know all of those social things. And the thing that I do offer on my blog, I mean, you called it a newsletter, but basically I write posts from time to time. And like I shared your story. I used to do this a lot where I would, you know, because people write to me, you know, they've tried the experiments and they, you know, write to me and say something like, you're never going to believe this. And of course, you know, I love, so I used to share a lot of those stories. And I think that's when you had written to me and sent me that picture is when I was really focusing it. But so there's a lot of those kind of fun stories about, you know, interesting manifestations that would be farther back, but there's something like 700 or 800 blog posts on there. Just with, you know, interesting things to ponder, to play with, inspiring stories, just a little dose of positivity. It's totally free. People can sign up if they're interested in that, you know, and my books are listed on there if people are interested in reading my books. So, I haven't been doing any play shops lately, but I just recently been invited to do a couple more. I did a thing with Mike Dooley earlier this year. That was a lot of fun. We did the Magical Manifestation Adventure where we had people manifesting a different thing for 21 days. We had a little bingo card and that was a lot of fun. But and so that really was, we raised a bunch of money for the Taz Gratitude 2 Foundation.
Nice.
you know, we both had a good time doing that. So, you know, occasionally something like that will pop up. For the most part, it's just, you know, I write things here and there. And so that's what's available to people, and they can just check me out at my website.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, I feel like you've brought so much joy into my life. I feel so grateful for you. And I feel like I don't know, I'm very inspired by at least what you put out into the world on your blog is just like, I feel like it's a constant reminder just to like, yeah, don't forget you are love. Like that's your natural state. And like when you can resume that in your body and like come from that place, the whole world changes. It's like, it's very much your lens on like, if you were just like take off a pair of glasses and then you could see, oh, it is sunny outside. It's like that. Yeah. That's how it feels to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it like tunes my perspective. Cause I think, before really discovering you or discovering kind of any of this perspective, I was just like, I don't know. I very much was like, I know what the world is. And I was very like, I just kind of muscled the path, you know, and like decided the way things were and what they were gonna be. And as soon as I started to like practice just stepping back and remembering to have like no expectations, it's weird, man. Everything changes. Like I found this happen so many times when I can remember that stance and just like all of a sudden some surprises show up and so it's like positive things start to happen. It's
right
spooky in a great way.
Yeah, you notice all the beauty out there that was probably always there, but you just were too busy thinking about other stuff. So yeah, it is really powerful to, you know, be on this path of more joy and delight and just being open to whatever this moment brings.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's totally just a reminder to be open. Well, I think I have covered all my questions. I had such a wonderful time talking with you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. How long have you been doing your podcast?
9 years.
Oh, wow. That's fabulous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's very similar to you. And like, just, I started doing it because I was talking to myself.
Uh-huh. And right. That's all we're doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I literally was like recording things on my phone, like voice memos, like, don't forget you're okay. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
You start going in that spiral. It's all, you know, it's all an illusion. Like you got to step back and like, just use these steps. And then I had a bunch of them. And then I was like, you know, maybe other people would benefit from this as well. And then I was also writing a blog for a site called Hello Giggles. It was called Teaspoon of Happy. And it was all just positivity, you know, a weekly positivity blog. And so I started podcasting that stuff as well. And then I started getting a lot of people writing to me and saying like, hey, this really helped me. And I feel like, you know, once you get a little dose of that, it's like the best feeling in the world.
Right. Because everyone we help, we're really helping ourselves, you know, cause we're all one. So it's always so good to think that something you might've thought of or said or whatever helps somebody else. Because, you know, again, we're all just walking each other home, as Ram Dass once said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. I know, it's weird. It's almost like, I talk to people like I'm their best friend because in some ways I am.
Right. Right.
I don't know you, but I do know you because like I'm going through the same thing.
Right.
And I'm like, don't worry. This is the way we get there. It's very cool. And over the years, I don't know if you feel this way about your books, but like over the years, I feel like I can sense them more, you know, I can sense people more, or I can connect more to people I don't know.
Well, because you're opening up, you know, as we open up, it's just amazing what all we find. So we're connected to everything. We just don't always know it. So you're just getting more and more aware of that connection with everyone.
That's cool. Yeah, totally. Well, because like, yeah, I feel like before I was so insecure and I'm definitely like one of those people I identify as overly sensitive. Mm-hmm. And like, so negative feedback has always been like crippling, you know, in the past. And like, if one person said something bad, I'd be like, oh God, I can't do this. I'm terrible at this. And now I'm like, I guess through the process of just growing more open and more like in tune with just what I have to offer, I think I've just been a little bit more trusting. And then I think with that, less sensitive, maybe, hopefully. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you strike me as very wise and very connected. So I think, you know, you're on the right path for sure. Yeah. So good on you.
I hope so. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah. Thanks for talking to me.
I had a great time. And I will share the link with this when it's posted. And I'll also add in the show notes of this episode, all of your blog link and your book link and stuff like that.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right, Pam. Well, have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. You're in California, right?
Yes.
Okay. So you still got a long part of your day. Well, I do too, actually. But anyway, it was great talking to you.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Bye.